Hello, I'm Sherry House, a missionary living in Thailand who loves to study the lives of great women of whom it can be said, she hath done what she could. Welcome to Silhouettes, my weekly story about a lady whose life challenges, encourages, and teaches me. I hope as you listen today, your heart will be encouraged and challenged too, to do what you can for the Lord. So grab a cup of tea, sit back and enjoy. Let me tell you her story. Annie Clemmer Funk was born on April 12, 1874, in Bally, Pennsylvania. She came from a long line of Mennonites who had emigrated from Germany in the 1700s. She was one of nine children, and her family ran a mill farm. They faithfully attended Hereford Mennonite Church, where her father was a deacon for 25 years, and where Annie taught Sunday school. From a young age, Annie wanted nothing more than to be a teacher, and her love for reading books about faraway places like Africa and China influenced her desire to want to teach somewhere on the mission field. Annie studied teaching at the Westchester Normal School in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and went on to attend D.L. Moody's Northfield Seminary for Young Ladies for the purpose of preparing herself for full-time service. While home from seminary in 1899, Annie, aged 25, attended a special conference held at her home church to address the urgent needs in India, a country that had been ravaged by famine for the past few years. After hearing about the plight of the Indian people, Annie was even more determined to serve the Lord on the foreign field. Upon her graduation, she was given a home assignment where she worked with immigrants in the slums of Chattanooga, Tennessee. From there, she accepted a staff position with the YWCA in Paterson, New Jersey. In 1906, at the age of 32, Annie became the first single female Mennonite missionary when she answered an urgent plea put out by missionaries for an unmarried woman to come and help reach the women and children of India. She left on November 16th of that same year and made the four-week-long, 9,000-mile arduous journey all by herself. She settled in the town of Jhansgir, a district in the central province of India. She started by learning the Hindi language and getting to know the area. The children in her home church and other churches in America raised funds to purchase Annie a bike. She used it extensively to travel from village to village, carrying her Bible and a portable organ. Although the heat was stifling and she was surrounded by people suffering from leprosy, malaria, and cholera, Annie thrived in the primitive living circumstances. She believed that the love that drew her to Christ would draw others to Him as well. In 1908, after being in India for only a year and a half, Annie was able to fulfill her dream and opened a village school for poor girls who would otherwise have no education. The school was a one-room mud hut, and she had 17 girls for her first enrollment. In 1910, Annie was able to move her school to a much more substantial brick building, which was better suited for her growing enrollment. Annie acknowledged that some might see this as secular work, but she wrote to a friend, "By these means, the people come to see that we are here to help them and not to hinder them. It is a drawing cord, and we trust that through it, the children may be wont to see the love of our Savior, and through them, the parents. These things are bound to influence for good, even if we will never see the visible fruit of our labors." In March of 1912, after being in India for 5 years, Annie received a telegram from her pastor at her home church saying she needed to take an early furlough and come home quickly as her mother was unwell and that he had purchased 2 passage tickets for her. Annie traveled by land and sea through India, France, and finally England. Upon arriving, she learned that the last part of her trip, a voyage on the SS Haverford, which would take her to America, would be delayed 6 more days due to a coal strike. At the suggestion of a travel agent, she traded her ticket in for a second-class ticket on a luxury liner called the Titanic. The Titanic's maiden voyage was set to leave Southampton the very next day. The agent assured her it would get her home in record time. On April 14, 1912, at the age of 38, Annie died along with more than 1,500 others when the Titanic sunk at sea. Annie's body, if ever recovered, was never identified. Eventually, the school Annie started was renamed Annie C. Funk Memorial Girls' School. Donations of money were given by friends and churches in America to enlarge the school and keep it going. A second-story dormitory was added for boarding students, and in the end, more than 3,500 girls were educated at the school, with many coming to know the Lord as Christ before its doors closed in 1960. A memorial gravestone was erected at her home church's cemetery in Pennsylvania that says her life was one of service in the spirit of the Master, not to be ministered unto, but to minister. Well, you can find out more about Annie Funk on my website, sherryhouse.com, but let me tell you one more story from her life that resonated with one of my own. Annie celebrated her 38th birthday just a couple days into the voyage on the Titanic. On the night of their fourth day at sea, as the ship was nearing Newfoundland, they hit an iceberg which tore an opening in the unsinkable ship. The order was given for the lifeboats to be lowered, and women and children began to be ushered into them. Annie was safely seated in one of the last lifeboats available when she heard a woman yell, "My children, my children!" The woman's children were on the boat. Annie immediately stood up and allowed the woman to have her seat. A quick Google search will tell you that Annie is not listed among those who are considered to be the most famous people who died or survived the sinking of the Titanic. On that list, you will find a millionaire, a famous actress, the owner of Macy's, a socialite, a railroad magnate, a steel magnate, a fashion designer, a major landowner, a Broadway producer, and a countess, among others. Much has been recorded about those famous people, and many of them were made even more famous when they were included in the Hollywood movie Titanic. In stark contrast, Annie's story is not well known outside of Christian circles. Her only worldly accolades include a memorial marker in the Mennonite Church Cemetery in Pennsylvania and a plaque on the chapel wall at Northfield School where she trained. Annie had done nothing to cause the world to count her as famous in their eyes, but in Zhangjiagui, she has not been forgotten, where her story has become a legend and where her school, although now in ruins, is still visited by locals and tourists alike who come to see the home and remember the story of Anne Funk's bravery to come from a little community from the other side of the world to teach poor Indian girls and tell them about Christ. Only eternity will reveal the full extent of the results of Annie's short ministry on this earth. We don't always get to see the rewards of our labors, but sometimes the Lord gives us a glimpse of what it will be like in heaven to see the results of the work we've done on earth. In 2016, I traveled back to Nigeria for the first time since leaving there in 1997. Upon arriving in Ibadan, I found many of my Sunday school girls were still faithfully attending church, and some had married men I taught in the Bible college. It was a blessing to learn that they had been faithfully serving the Lord these many years. One of my jobs when I first arrived on the field was to start and run a singles ministry at our church. Within a year, our group had over 100 members. Most of these also attended the large university in our town. During my visit to Ibadan, I was being hosted by a friend and her husband who run a local Christian school that I had taught at for most of my short time in Nigeria. On the first day I arrived at the school, a woman came running up to me shouting, "My mother is here! My mother is here!" I'll admit, I was taken aback as I had no idea who this woman was, nor why in the world she would be calling me her mother. When she asked if I remembered her, I nodded affirmatively. How could I possibly tell her I didn't have the faintest clue who she was? She began explaining why she was so excited to see her mother to one of the other teachers I had just met. As I listened to her tell the story and searched this grown woman's animated face, I began to see the face of a young lady who had attended our church. Her name was Abby and had started attending our singles group sometime in the last year of her university studies. For the Nigerian university students, getting through college was a struggle itself, as the teachers often went on strike or other things kept them from learning. Finding work after graduation, though, was the real battle, and many graduates spent years submitting job applications and trying to make ends meet while waiting for a door of opportunity to open up. Abby went on to explain to the teacher that day that after her graduation, I brought her to meet my friend who was the head of the Christian school that I was teaching at and recommended her for a teaching position. I honestly do not remember doing this, but she was hired, and shortly after that, I left Nigeria to work on a different mission field. Since Facebook and social media was not a thing for many years to come, I had no communication with Abby from the day I left Nigeria until that day when I was standing in the school, looking at this grown woman calling me her mother. Although I'm embarrassed to admit I had forgotten all about this incident and, quite frankly, this young lady, she had not forgotten me and always considered me to be like a mother, someone who cared enough about her to find her a job, which enabled her to not have even one day of worry about where her income would come from, a job that allowed her to work in a Christian environment, and a job that provided a way eventually for her and her husband to let their children go to Christian school. What a beautiful treasure the Lord gave me that day. It makes me think how sweet it will be in heaven to find out the results of many of our other acts of kindness that we've done for Christ, whether we remember them or not. Today, I'd like to take a few minutes and talk to you about this matter of searching for accolades in all the wrong places. One of the tools of the devil to distract those of us trying to live our lives for Christ is to put things in our line of sight that cause us to be dissatisfied or that leave us feeling we are living an unsuccessful life or a life that is somehow less than par to the life of those living for worldly pleasure. There was a time when I wanted to be a famous fashion designer in New York City. I dreamt of having my designs displayed in the most prominent fashion magazines and to have the honor of being recognized by the fashion elite and have celebrities know me by name. The Lord had other plans for my life. I've never been featured in a magazine, and I'm quite certain that no celebrity has ever even heard my name mentioned. The psalmist talks about the dangers of having your eyes on the prosperity of the wicked in Psalm 73 when he says, "But as for me, my feet were well nigh slipped, for I was envious at the foolish, when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." The psalmist goes on to say in verse 22, after having a period of reflection and time spent with the Lord in his sanctuary, "So foolish was I, and ignorant, I was as a beast before thee. Nevertheless, I am continually with thee. Thou hast hold me by my right hand. Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside thee." The desire to be famous or well-known or to even have the work we do recognized is a basic desire in human nature. Getting honor for the work we do is not a sin. In fact, the Bible teaches us in Romans 13:7, "Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." In 1 Timothy 5:17 and 18, we're also told, "Let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially they who labor in the word and doctrine. For the scripture saith, the laborer is worthy of his reward." Again, receiving honor for the work we do is not a sin, but wanting recognition or honor from man or from the world should not be the driving force behind what we do. The Bible tells us in Colossians 3:23 and 24, "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ." Nearly all of Matthew 6 is dedicated to warning us to not do alms deeds or say our prayers or fast in order to gain the attention of man. The chapter goes on to warn us that the work we do or the treasures we try to acquire should not be of earthly value and instead should be rooted in eternal value. Our goal in life should not be to have our name plastered in lights somewhere, but for it to be hidden in the heart of God that one day we might hear those words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." These verses remind me of the story of the old missionary couple, Henry Morrison and his wife. They had been serving in Africa for 40 years, and they were finally retiring and returning to New York City. They happened to be on the same ship that Teddy Roosevelt was on when he was returning from one of his big game hunting expeditions. When they pulled into port, there was a huge fanfare with the mayor and other dignitaries, and crowds of people cheering and clapping as Teddy Roosevelt disembarked. No one, though, came to greet the elderly missionaries and welcome them home. It was a discouragement, particularly to Henry. Later that night, once they were settled in their humble one-bedroom apartment, Henry discussed his frustration at their homecoming, or lack thereof, with his wife. She sweetly suggested he discuss it with the Lord and tell him how he was feeling. A short while later, the husband came out of the room with a peaceful look on his face. The wife said, "I see you have it settled then." To which her husband replied, "Yes, the Lord reminded me, I'm not home yet." You and I are not home yet, and won't be until the day we step through heaven's gates. Until then, may we keep loving the Lord and keep looking for ways to show the love of Christ to others. May we keep serving Him and keep looking for ways to serve others so as to draw them to Christ. One day our accolades will come, and the crowns we have won will not be held up for all to see, but will gladly be laid at Jesus' feet. Well, I hope you've enjoyed today's silhouette and learning a little bit more about Annie Funk's story and this matter of being careful to not look for accolades in all the wrong places. She truly was a woman of whom it could be said she hath done what she could. Let's you and I go do what we can do.
Silhouettes with Sherry is written and told by missionary Sherry House. To learn more about Sherry, this story, or other stories about women who were used of God, read Sherry's blog at sherryhouse.com. That's SHARI House.com. Silhouettes can be heard at this time every week on this station. Silhouettes is a Causeway Media and Faith Music Radio production.